bar of caffeinated soap.
Yeah. Although that doesn't taste as good. You just have to swear a lot in front of your grandma if you want to. Oh, grandma, I have a headache. So? I have a fucking headache. Oak, you come over here. This is Rift's grandma.
What?
Okay. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
I'm Kevin.
And it's time for another episode of Video Games Hot Dog.
God damn it is.
Woo.
Yeah. We're all back in the same...
It's about time.
We're all back in the same room, and two of the three of us are drunk as fuck.
Yeah, Riff. What's your problem?
Yeah, why do you drink so much, Riff?
You're making us look bad.
I don't think it's me doing that.
Okay.
I don't know about the sun-kissed I see.
You know who we should have as a guest?
Yeah?
Chris Avalon.
I was going to suggest W.C. Fields. That one's probably trickier.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill?
Remember that one time when somebody asked on the KOL radio show if I had to have a threesome with you, Riff, and any other person, who would I choose for it to be? And I chose H.P. Lovecraft because I just wanted to talk to H.P. Lovecraft. Probably be weird. Yeah. I don't think he would like me because he would think that I was a Mexican.
Wasn't he like a communist?
I don't know if he was a communist or not. He was a racist. Is that...
Yeah.
Is commie like race?
Yeah.
What, race? No.
Commune?
Commune? Is commune like race?
Like rack.
Shit.
Common like rack.
Yeah, there was no way to make that a real joke.
No.
Drink! What have you guys been up to?
I saw a couple movies.
What'd you see?
I saw Wreck-It Ralph.
How was that?
Awesome.
Video game?
Yeah, very video game. Those guys know their video games.
Have you played any Wreck-It Ralph the video game?
I have not.
Okay.
Is there a Wreck-It Ralph the video game?
Yeah, it's...
Didn't they make some arcade... They made some arcade cabinets that they then, like, aged to make them look authentic.
Hmm.
Huh. Some Fix-It Freddy or whatever the game that's the source of.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's real good. I also saw The Man with the Iron Fists, which is, compared to movies in general, I would not say it's a good movie, but compared to cheesy fantasy kung fu movies, it's an awesome cheesy fantasy kung fu movie.
That's a weird endorsement.
Yeah.
This has been Movie Reviews starring Riff.
But yeah, it's fun.
I don't think I went to or saw any movies in the entire month.
You were on the road, so
I was.
I would understand that.
I was on a road trip. I went to Austin, Texas, where I went to an arcade. I went to Chicago, Illinois, where I went to an arcade.
Several arcades.
And a science museum. I went to Columbus, Ohio, where I went to a science museum. I went to Philadelphia, where I went to a science museum. And then I pretty much stopped going to all of those things. I had breakfast in Minneapolis.
Okay. I imagine you also had breakfast in many other places.
No. No, I don't eat breakfast.
It was a one-day road trip. You were in Minneapolis.
Was
the
well, I just only eat. I only eat three meals a month. That's how I keep my girlish figure. Yeah, a lot of science museums. Man, Kevin and I did a fun ass thing at a science museum,
man.
And it was rad as shit. I went to the COSI. The CO in COSI does not stand for Columbus, which is where COSI is. But so the science museum in Columbus, we went in there and the guy said, do you want just an admission or do you want to do some other shit too? And I said, well, I appreciate you going to the profanity right away. Like, you looked at me, you saw my leather jacket, my long hair, and you thought, this is a guy that I can say shit to. Now, a lot of people look at me and they say, Zach, you're a guy that you can't say shit to. But I am here to tell you, I am a guy that you can say shit to pretty much right away. Anyway, the guy said, what other kind of shit you want to do here at the COSI Museum? And I said, well, that's a good question, sir. What kind of shit is there to do, motherfucker? And he said, well, you can see Body Worlds. And I said, boring.
Been there,
he said,
done that.
You can watch a movie about the Titanic, which you'd have to go to the third science museum in Philadelphia that you won't be at for another 8 or 9 days. So you should probably skip that one. That is not actually what that guy said. That was just me in my cups getting confused about what things were available at what science museums. Anyway, he listed some other shit, including The Adventure. And I said, what's The Adventure? And he said, well, you go in and you run around and you solve some puzzles and stuff. And I said, well, that sounds fucking great. Yep. How much does that cost? And he said, $3. And I said,
I will do it twice.
I don't know.
We did.
We did, in fact, do it twice. Emily, who you might know from Video Games Taco, and I went to do The Adventure, and we had no idea what to expect. And we went in to the room, and I sort of leaned over and apologized to her once the initial presentation happened, because there was an animatronic statue on the wall that started to sing a little song about
questions
and how important it is to seek knowledge and ask questions. And it was real Sesame Street. And I was like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
And we got in there and, so that what they present you with is they say, all right, well, there's this archaeological dig going on, and we have unearthed these three statues of the three gods of there's the god of questions, who you meet in the beginning, and then there's the god of reason, the spirit of inspiration, and the spirit of perseverance, and each of them you are supposed to go into their domain, discover the three animals that will unlock their whatever, and then go up to them, and they are each an animatronic statue with a control panel with a bunch of brass carved animal
20 different
nodules on it, and you press the three and the thing like springs to life, talks to you, and reveals a symbol. You're given one of four symbols to begin with, and you fill in the rest of the three. And then once you've done that, and they're all the way that you find these animals is like in the first one, it's just a maze and the animals are just drawn on the walls in various places. Second one's trickier. There is one that like you can only see from a certain angle. There's one that you have to sort of mess with a display to get it to show it to you. And there is one that you theoretically couldn't see because of the lighting until you did a trick, but it was pretty easy to see even without doing the trick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you do those, and then she gives you a symbol. And then you go into the cave. I don't remember. The Cave of Perseverance was like some physical challenges.
Yeah, it was super neat, actually.
There was one of those just like sort of generic bullshit video game puzzles where there's three doors in between you and the exit, and there are some buttons that you hit to open various combinations of the doors, except they were all broken.
Yeah.
So you just went in there and it was like, can you figure out how to get through this hallway with nothing blocking your way? I bet you can. It was a spooky ghost voice. And then there was a very obviously designed for little kids or Catherine Zeta-Jones room filled with fog and lasers that you had to get across without tripping.
If you broke any of the laser beams, any of the lasers. Yelled at you, and if you did a second one, it would kick you out. It's pretty cool.
So then you get those four symbols, and you go up to the observatory, the tower, the second story of the observatory tower, type in those symbols, and you go in and you get a really interminable song and dance routine from a whole bunch of animatronic statues that tell you how great it is. Oh, good job. Good job, little guy. You really figured a bunch of shit out, didn't you? I'm so proud of you.
I didn't find it that interminable.
It was long. It was insulting.
It's like,
I know. And as a grown ass man, I felt very patronized by it.
Okay.
Anyway, and then what they give you is the big reveal that you've totally just already completely figured out, that these symbols also correspond with letters of the, you know, the normal American person alphabet, not the crazy old statue in the ruins alphabet. So then there's all these like messages scrawled all over the walls and stuff in this alphabet, which it's one of those things like if you go to Star Tours, all of the stuff that's written on the walls in basic, like the sort of like Star Wars equivalent of common, all of those glyphs are pretty legible as Roman characters, like they're similar.
It's not
enough
just that there's a one-to-one correspondence; it's that they kind of even look like,
Roman letters. You very quickly get to the point where you can just read them.
You say that I never got to the point where it was just like trivial to read.
Well, it isn't trivial. I mean, you have to.
sound it out kind
of. Yeah, it takes a little more. You got to say all the words. And it helps if you have somebody there.
Yeah.
Like, what was my word from 3 words ago in this sentence? Because I don't remember.
Somebody.
So it's a little bit of effort, but not a ton. Anyway. And then there's a bunch of other shit that just doesn't really have anything to do with anything.
Well, it doesn't seem like it does.
There is another alphabet. There are a bunch of things written in a third order alphabet on various things. You find there are like a couple little like journals, props that are journals that are propped open to pages that suggest that there's more going on, including one with a bunch of pairs of numbers that don't ever,
as far as we know,
correspond to anything.
They might.
Unless there is
another message.
I mean, we were told when we completed this thing that we were done, and they gave us like a prop.
Well, you haven't finished. So there's this second order alphabet.
Yeah. So you do this, and then it becomes pretty clear to you that there is a lot more going on than the thing that has been presented.
The thing that we did was
kids.
Like what? Yeah, like kind of what little kids do, and then like you're like, oh, there's also this layer for adults.
So we took a bunch of pictures of stuff. Like we both sort of on the first trip, it was 2 separate days, but we had to kind of leave before we were really ready. Took a bunch of pictures on the phone, spent a bunch of time that night in the hotel room like working out what this other alphabet was.
Yeah, we figured the alphabet out and like deciphered one of the puzzles that was hidden sort of just in the environment.
Which was mostly, it was mostly like cryptogram solving sort of, right? Because there were some vague similarities, but there was like a 5-letter Rosetta Stone for the two.
Yeah.
And
but it was a trick.
Yeah, but it was designed to be tricky because there were certain letters where multiple letters were represented because it was like a phonetic alphabet. I accidentally got a spoiler without which we probably wouldn't have been able to solve it.
Not as fast, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, then it turns out there's a second set of animals that you can plug into each of the statues.
And you get a different message.
You get a different
And there's no song, no dance. It's all
yeah,
like...
and they are just like, yeah, go talk to one of the people who's working here and ask them for something, and then they will give it to you. Or go knock on this door that you've seen. Like it's stuff that like unambiguously means that you figured it out and requires intervention on the part of the staff that are working there. And then it ultimately you get a key that unlocks a thing, and then you get a coin and a cryptic message from the time traveling crazy man who left you all these messages.
Yeah. It's pretty great. Like
it was fucking
it was
super fucking sweet.
The installation itself is just like just really well conceived. Like we had a bunch of aha moments that were like really satisfying. The sort of first message, the first second order message you're supposed to go to is the inspiration one, and like we were like, yeah, I'm pretty sure there's something going on here, but I haven't been able to figure it out. And like I took a picture with my camera with the flash, and we looked at it and we're like, what the fuck are those symbols? And that like in the first visit when we're like, you're not supposed to be able to see like the first animal because it's supposed to be the same color as the background, and like you're only supposed to be able to see it if you like swing a light over to it.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work for some reason because it was pretty obvious, like either the shade of blue that they used to try to set it against the black.
Well, it was also the paint. It was much bigger. The paint had a different sort of like reflection than the wall, so like it was a different color, but it was also glossy.
But then this mural that I happened to take a picture of with white light, like we were like, what are all those symbols? Like there were symbols that we didn't see the first time we were there because it actually worked with those. And they're like, oh shit, I bet those are the key to like solving this part of that mystery.
Yeah, there was just a thing in there. And the first day, one of the guys that was working there, he like came in and was watching me dick around with these things because it was like 10... It looked like the array of cups at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah.
And there were these things, and every time you touched one, it made a sound. And there were certain pairs of them that touching them would make like a weird like recording of somebody saying a couple words in a different language or whatever, which didn't turn out to be anything.
That we
which
found.
Is yet another, it's either a red herring or yet another layer to it. But then it turns out that hidden in this stuff that you... Was it in stuff that you couldn't see in normal light, or was it just...
It was that blue on the black.
Yeah, stuff that you had to be using a flashlight to see gave you an ordering for touching the things, and then just a recording played that told you what the animal was for that particular puzzle.
Yeah, the spoilers, by the way, guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
In case you're
this thing is apparently not going to be open that much longer. It's been there for 10 years.
Yeah, I wonder if it's...
And it's apparently closing in January.
Yeah, we have no idea. It seems like that might be the case, but it seems like it would. It's such a huge investment in, yeah, in like technology and resources and space that would be sad if they.
We were there right behind this couple of gals who had just solved it, and then they were
They'd
like,
been working out for a year and a half.
They hadn't been. I mean, they had families and stuff, so they weren't able to just go
full time.
Although, when we finished it, albeit with some help from various people, the woman told us that the average amount of time that people spend in there to solve it is like 15 or 16 hours, and we did it in like
7 or 8.
Seven, yeah. So it's like it was meant to be done over many visits, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, these gals that had figured it out, they were like, "Hey, can we? Is it going to bug you guys if we watch you try to figure this out?" I'm like, nope.
They just sort of followed us around. And they were like, you know, this is really cool watching people like.
And what they did, we did get some help because they would pull us out of blind alleys if we were like we would say, well, we're thinking this, and they'll, yep, we thought that for a really long time and wasted a ton of effort.
Yeah,
trying to split the sign. All right.
Yeah, so that they saved us. We were under the constraint, like they lived in the area, whereas we lived. We were.
Yeah, we had
45 minutes.
We had until the museum closed to solve this, or we were just not going to be back in Columbus by the time the thing went away. Yeah, but it was pretty cool. We got a coin, and a scroll.
Yep.
I like a sweet coin and a scroll.
It's not a very sweet coin.
I wrote out a bunch of different like Rosetta Stone pieces of paper to help translate.
Yeah, I have all of my notes from that too. Yeah, you in the hotel room in the night when we got up, I was like, I wonder if it would make sense to spend some time making a code sheet for everybody. And Kevin was like, already done. Handed me my code sheet.
Yeah, I wrote this out several times and just gave one to everybody so that it would be easier to translate the messages.
Right, thanks, buddy.
That's pretty cool. I've been doing a lot of fooling his money.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
It's quite good. It's a lot harder than the original one. Huh. I started out trying
the original one. I feel like was mostly hard because it was bullshit.
Well, there were a lot of puzzles in the original one that you could get through just by clicking the buttons randomly until they happened to go. I have not encountered any puzzles that you could solve that way in this one. I initially started out trying to do it without any outside tools, but eventually I just gave up. I'm using the hell out of morewords.com and Scrabble dictionaries and stuff, and it's still pretty tough. And there's some good, like the original one had that puzzle that was where you had to figure out how the card game worked, and you had to beat the guy at the game. There's at least three of those in this one.
I really did not enjoy that.
Oh, that
really?
Was my favorite one.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it to some extent. Like it was neat trying to like.
Did you like take a lot of notes?
I took a lot of notes.
Yeah, I'm up to like 6 pages of notes.
I wasn't
going to
take a lot of notes.
Wow.
There's an interesting puzzle type of a type that I haven't seen before, where you have a collection of letters that you're auctioning off to characters who already have sets of letters. And so if you offer a letter up for sale, all the NPC characters have already sets of 4 letters. So any of the characters that can take this 5th letter and make a word will bid on this letter.
Okay.
And you have to figure out the order in which you want to sell the letters to make them so you hit a certain goal. Yeah.
Okay.
And you have to figure out the order. You have to figure out like, all right, I have to sell this letter before this one so that I can get rid of this guy so that he won't outbid this other guy on this other letter.
Oh, what determines whether they'll outbid each other?
I'm not sure what determines how much they will bid on a word, but there are definitely words that they will give you more money for than other words.
Interesting.
And often the most expensive ones aren't the words you want. They aren't the ones that you can get to your goal with.
Huh.
Here's a question. Do you trust this guy?
Yeah, especially considering how long he's been working on it. It seems like he's put a lot of time into testing the puzzles.
Was there anything in A Fool and His Money that was
broken?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
not that I noticed.
That violated
Fool's Errand.
You know, because you were talking. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Because you were talking about this in the, like, a lot of what we were doing sort of floundering around in the adventure early on was because we weren't sure to what extent we could trust the puzzle designers.
I do have a lot of problems.
We found some typos.
Yeah, there were typos. Like, the stuff, the second order puzzle in the Caves of Perseverance, we required ridiculous. A lot of help. I think not because we were bad at them, but because they were bad puzzles.
Yeah.
Like that, there's a whole like sort of arithmetic section of it that is just not, the clues are very much not clear that they are clues. And that's the, like, I had gotten to the point where I sort of trusted the people who were cluing this stuff that they would not produce a clue that was ambiguous, but then they just totally did.
Hmm. Yeah, the last section, which was all just numbers and sort of sequences and math and stuff like that, was there were so many different possibilities that I don't know how you would you'd be able to like narrow it down just based on what's present in the space.
And that's the one where one of the workers came up and started really giving us a lot of hints.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's because nobody figures that out.
No. I think it was badly designed. I really do.
But if nobody figures it out, the fact that it's badly designed is an explanation for that, right?
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know how you make a puzzle that is accessible to lots of different levels of puzzlers and is still satisfying for people at the same time, right? Like,
I mean, to a certain extent, it doesn't matter if the second order puzzle at that adventure thing is
correct
easy
yes.
to solve, right? It's supposed to be hard. Mm-hmm.
It's such a, in puzzle design, it is very difficult to make a puzzle that is difficult but not impossible or unfair.
Yeah, the unfairness is the issue. Like, so I mean, this is something that I've been thinking a lot about, which is the like both the notion of trust, but also like do you have faith in the systems too, right? Like, do I believe that this puzzle is both solvable and something that's like designed with like human capabilities in mind or whatever, right? Like, because there are some, you know, encryption puzzles, if you want to call them puzzles or whatever, that are something that you really basically just need to write a computer program and let it run for a year to solve, right? Like, and that's not necessarily fair or fun.
Or things like why it's not considered cool at the MIT Mystery Hunt to have an anagram-based puzzle. Because it's just,
well, it's just randomly anagram. I feel like you can have an anagram if it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, and you know that there's only one possible combination for those letters to anagram out. But
right.
But an anagram that has 30 letters in it is going to be possibly anagrammed into a million different valid phrases.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you. I think you're card for that perplexity game. Mm-hmm. Like that was a very clever
that's true. That was an anagram puzzle. Was,
and I wouldn't fault that at all.
Yeah.
But like I feel like a lot of the standard trope with modern mystery hunt puzzles, modern in sort of air quotes, is that there's almost always an ordering that you can figure out to like give you a reason for letters to be in a particular sequence.
Right. See, it's weird. Like, the way that you guys, the baggage that you bring in from having done a lot of mystery hunts in the past seems super strange to me because, like, well, okay, this puzzle, the solution cannot involve anagrams because that is, like,
sloppy.
It is ambiguous and sloppy, but it can totally involve some fucking genetics thing that only a PhD biologist could solve.
Right.
And that's totally fair game. Like, because they're operating under the assumption that in a crowd of the people at MIT who are the most interested in solving these
there will be one
super hard puzzles, there will be a geneticist on your team.
Sure. Yeah.
Or at least you will know one.
Or eventually your team will evolve one.
Or also that you don't, you know, the puzzles are designed such that you don't have to solve all of them. These did we do any end runs around any of the things that we were supposed to figure out in the adventure, or was there any way to?
What do you mean by end?
Like there was never a point. There was never a point where we like had two of the three animals, and so we just tried every combination.
We did that for a little bit, right? Like
it never yielded anything, though. Well, I feel because like
we. So what we tried to do is like we had figured out half of a puzzle. We knew like there was like a grid, and we knew like the things that were supposed to fill in the left side of the grid, and then we needed to figure out when it went along the bottom to sort of index into stuff.
And there were a lot of red herrings that almost.
Yeah.
Met the criteria that would have made it a good solution for the bottom of the grid, which was frustrating. I feel like that is the thing that I would change about that design.
Yeah, we knew not only the word that went on, so like there was a grid of animals, because you're supposed to find three animals, right? So there was a grid of animals that we knew that there was a word that went along the right-hand side, and that there were spaces for a five-letter word on the bottom, and we knew that that word needed to have the letters I, N, and R in it. Right, and we're like, okay, what have we seen that's a five-letter word with N, I, and R? And like a bunch of places, there was the name of the architect of the puzzle or of the maze or whatever, mm-hmm. and that had N, I, and R and was a five-letter word. And we're like, oh, well, that's
got to be it. I mean, it's yeah.
And that was just not it at all.
Uh-huh. and what it was a sort of a guy kind of told us. Yeah. A guy spoiled it a little bit of this for us. Was like, oh, did you guys figure out the thing in the Legend of the Monkey where you had to look at the first letter, and then the guy working there was like, dude, shut up, let them solve it on their own. Like, yeah. Look at the first letter of stuff in the Legend of the Monkey. Huh?
So, I mean, was that clued somewhere that we just didn't find the clue? Did we not understand it?
Yeah, I don't think it was. I think it was just kind of bullshit.
And that's the thing. Like, that's a question of trust. So. And on the video game side of this, something that I had, you know, over the past 2 or 3 weeks since we last recorded, I've been playing a fair number of like iOS games and losing a bunch of progress in save games to the point where I'm just like, I'm not playing your game anymore because like
curiosity, huh?
Well, no, I didn't. So that wasn't curiosity. It was Carmageddon has reset my progress twice. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, fuck that. I'm just not playing your game anymore. As fun as it is, like, you know, part of it is like building up a character that has a cool car, and like you've just reset it twice without any like reason to have done that or whatever. And then Dungeon Story, like they did a revamp, and part of it was just like the save game not working half the time. And so like I made a ton of progress one day, and then I went back to play it the next day, and I was just back to where I'd been the day before. I'm like, fuck that. And you know, a game that you and I had spent several hours playing several years ago with Castle Crashers.
Oh yeah, we played Castle Crashers. Yeah,
and like we had played for days.
Four of us. Like I had gone out and bought two extra Xbox controllers
specifically
because it was like, we got a bunch of people in town and we're gonna play a bunch of Castle Crashers, and then just fucking corrupted save game. Start over.
Yeah, we all lost our progress. It's like all the pets and all the like weapons and stuff, and it was just like gone. I was like, what the fuck? You know, like we were super pissed. And I think they eventually patched it.
Yeah, they did. They fixed it. I mean, you know, and there are bugs and stuff, and it sucks. It's just like.
But like, this is a question that I think is kind of an important one, you know, moving forward for the industry as a whole. Like, what does it mean to sort of establish a rapport of trust between the developer or the, you know, the producer of the game and the user, the client? And is that something that you can violate and recover from? You know, like in Kingdom of Loathing, we have done some shit that people have like lost some of their stuff, and
the game I got drunk once and deleted everything by accident, and we had a backup from the previous night of half of the data in the game, and a backup from like 60 days earlier of the other half of the game data, because there was an error in the backup script that had started breaking like halfway through the alphabet in the names of the tables. So everything that started with S or later, we had data from 6 weeks prior. And yeah, it was a big mess.
That was a huge, and like, I wonder how many people just quit. They're like, well, fuck this, you know, no longer am I going to be invested in this thing that is so obviously fragile, right? Like,
I don't know. You know, we immediately started just busting our asses working it into the fiction of the game and sure. and trying desperately to like say, all right, look, we are going to try to make this right.
Sure.
I mean, we
have that level of communication with our players that just about nobody else does.
There was that, I think it was it a Korean or Japanese MMO maybe a year ago, less than a year ago, that they had a catastrophic failure, lost all their data.
And they just shut down.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right. Like, that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Both from the point of view of a developer, because, like, you know, you're just losing all of your revenue or whatever, and potentially, you know, this awesome community that you might have built up. And then also from the player point of view, where you could have invested so much time in this thing and it's just gone. Like,
hey, speaking of which, like, half the drives in our backup server have failed. It's pretty sweet.
we're playing backup roulette.
It still works. We still have backups.
Sure.
I think we have had the maximum number of drives fail that can fail before those backups stop being a thing. I ordered some new drives. Don't worry about it, guys. Totally going to go down there. Get sick. I always get sick when I go to the data center.
It is windy as fuck in there.
My girlfriend tells me I always get sick when I go to the data center. That only happened once. I think the first time I went to the data center after we started dating, I got sick. And then she was like, at this point, I've concluded that every time you go to the data center, you get sick. So you're not allowed to go back there. I'm like, oh, all right. I don't really like touching those computers anyway. I'm always worried that they're going to stop working, that we're going to jostle the rack and the drives are going to start.
Yeah.
Dominoing.
Yeah. Just tearing themselves to pieces with their 7,200 RPM revolutions. Revolutions per minute revolutions is why, mm-hmm. is what that stood for. Yeah.
Revolutions number 9 per minute.
Oh, man. We played the shit out of a super sweet-ass board game at Columbus, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Riff, have you ever played a board game? It's really a card game. I guess there's a board.
It's really a parlor
it's,
game.
Yeah, it's a parlor game. It is a game called The Resistance.
It doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to articulate the rules of this. It is pretty simple.
People have played Mafia or Werewolf before. Yeah. That gives you the basic structure.
Okay. So at the start of the game, anywhere from what 4 to 10 people can play.
Something like that. Yeah.
Based on how many people are playing, there are a certain number of members of the resistance, and then a certain number of spies. And so a minority of you are spies. You are handed a card in the beginning of the game secretly, which tells you whether you're a member of the resistance or if you are a spy. And then there's all right, everybody close your eyes. Now, spies, open your eyes. So all the spies know who each other are.
Theoretically.
But unless you fuck that up, which happened fairly regularly. And then, spies close your eyes. Now everybody open your eyes. So now there are people who are good guys, and then there are people who are spies, and the spies know who each other are. Somebody is picked at random to be the first, like, mission leader. And over the course of 5 rounds, you have a certain number of operatives that you have to send on a mission. And so the leader will propose, all right, well, I think that me and Riff and Jody should go on this mission. Everybody then, in front of everyone, votes yes or no on, do I approve of
this team? This mission, yeah.
Right? If it gets approved, then all of the team members get to submit a card to either like succeed on the mission or sabotage the mission.
Okay.
Right? Those are done at random. Those are private and shuffled. So, like, you know, 3 of us go on the mission, it comes up 2 successes and 1 failure. The mission fails, so the spy team gets a point, and it's like best of 5. It is really brilliantly designed, though, because you can, like, the first 2 teams don't have to have any overlap, but the second one, the third round, has enough people that have to go that you can't do just a subset of the previous ones. So it forces you to take risks. It forces the person who is the leader to engage, if they are not a spy, to have some level of uncertainty in who they're choosing. And that's when you just start arguing about it. And then the rest of the game is just arguing and trying to convince people that you're not a spy if you're a spy.
Yeah.
like trying to convince people that other people are spies. If you think that they're spies, it's so great. It is the most multiplayer game I have ever played. And it took a couple games to get into it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's got, well, because it's, to me,
It is one of those games that's incredibly dependent on the group of people you're playing.
We got pretty lucky.
Yeah.
With the group that we were in. There were some duds, but there were some people who just weren't really participating.
That's a
little bit of a liability. And then there were just people who were like just completely without guile, who were just like, for fuck's sake. And then there are, you know, there was like me who in the first couple of games, it was like, well, from the look on your face, I know you're a spy. And I finally sort of learned to have a little bit of a poker face by the end. God, there was a game. This made me so mad. I had concluded that,
yeah.
I knew that I was not a spy.
Yeah, you always know your own thing.
And I was the only other person that I had concluded that I was certain about not being a spy was Kevin. And the reason that I had concluded that Kevin was not a spy is because Kevin made a move on the second mission that I knew that the optimizer in Kevin would not have allowed him to make if he was the spy. Because the spy can go along with a mission to not reveal his identity, but I knew that Kevin would not have done that when it put the resistance within 1 point of winning. He would not have been willing to fake it to get a 0-2 to be behind by 2 points. And so the entire rest of my managing this game was predicated on me knowing that I was not a spy and that Kevin was not a spy, and periodically saying, I am going to be so fucking pissed off if it turns out that Kevin is a spy. I'm telling you right now, it is going to fuck my shit up really badly if Kevin is a goddamn spy in this, because turns out that Kevin was the fucking spy. And the move that he made that convinced me that he was not the spy was a fucking mistake. He had accidentally thrown the wrong goddamn card
in the pile.
Darn.
But if it had been done on purpose, would have been super
that
brilliant.
That would have been masterful.
Yeah. It would have been like the...
And the spies won that game. Yeah. We pulled it off. It was, it was 0-2 at the beginning, and then the spies ended up...
One thing, that the spies won almost every game.
It's really hard
but
to
But it kind of doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You don't feel bad winning or losing. It is very much just about...
Some people feel vindicated. Some people feel betrayed. Some people feel like they pulled something over on other people, and it's just
everybody feels like they won in some way or other. You know.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that story? I'm sure you have, about the
hook hand on the car door.
No. At a gaming con,
girl got a hot dog broken off.
Someone ran a game of werewolf with no werewolves.
Oh no!
So, after
who was deciding on who was dying?
The game master. Yeah, who every round the game master just picked somebody who wasn't really playing as hard as everyone else and said, "Oh, the werewolves killed that guy," and it got down to the last two guys, like almost getting into a fist fight because they each were sure that the other guy was the werewolf.
Wow!
How did that game resolve?
They killed the game master.
Murdered each other.
And that brings it back to the whole faith thing, right? That works once.
Yeah.
Right? And then you just can never, if somebody violates the contract, then I don't think you're going to play with them anymore, right? Because it's as fun as that might have been and a cool story for us, I don't know that,
I mean, there are, it's not an on and off thing. I finished the new Professor Layton, and we can talk about it more in a bit, but there were two or maybe three puzzles out of the 130, 140 that I felt weren't quite worded fairly, but those three were not enough to make me quit playing.
Sure.
It's weird with a video game, because if you see 150 puzzles and somewhere there's a number to the left of a slash and the number to the right of the slash is 150, it is a lot more important that you solve all 150 of those puzzles than it would be if there was just some end game goal. Right. And like a mystery hunt, if it was like, your goal is to find the treasure of Turdopolis or whatever, and you were able to find that using only 120 of the puzzles. And there were 30 of them that you were just like, well, I either wasn't smart enough to solve these or they were badly designed and I'll never know. But like a video game where you really want to, you know, you like when you are given a barometer to be a completist against, it is, you're going to go over every single one of those puzzles with a fine tooth comb to make sure that it's like something that you can deal with. And you're going to be pissed off if it's not. Yeah. And you're going to be pissed off if it's even a little bit goofy. Man, I wish I could have stayed into the Professor Layton games.
The new one is pretty good. It's been too long since I played the other ones to rate it against them, but it's a really good Professor Layton game. It's really beautiful. Whatever guy they got to work the 3D effects should write a manual for all the other 3DS developers, because this is the only game that I've played the entire game with the 3D cranked all the way up instead of like three quarters where I usually leave it.
Is it a 3DS game or is
it?
Yeah,
it's a 3DS.
It's
game.
Not. So it's not out for the.
I don't think so.
Wow.
And
3D was just is crystal clear and sharp and looks fantastic.
I don't understand that, man. I tried. I was like, all right, Sticker Star, I'm going to play this with the 3D on. I'm going to play this 3DS like it's a 3D thing. And yeah, it just
Sticker Star 3D is not as good as
immediately
the
turned it, cranked it back down. It's like, there is no point to this. It does not add anything.
Isn't that the one where
I
you
feel like when
sometimes
it's done
to
well,
hit
it
things?
Adds
nah,
to...
that's new Super...
Oh, new Super Mario Brothers.
New Super 3D cool. Duperland Brothers. Yeah, it doesn't look that cool. If I want 3D, I'll go out into the real world where there's girls and stuff.
Ugh.
Not just like bricks and pipes. Not that there aren't bricks and pipes in the real world, too.
Yeah.
That's it. Not that bricks and pipes and girls. I was like, what?
Yeah, no. No. The girls in my world are made out of bricks and pipes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know who I would definitely trust? Doc Trauma, photographer of Loathing.
Oh, yeah.
Generous backer of our Kickstarter.
I was going to say that, like, if I was trying to pick a team to be on my side, if I was playing playing a board game, I think I might go with Spongy, Big Pixie, and Love Bane. All strong supporters.
Those would be the three people that you would send.
Yeah, on my team.
I think, we could not possibly do without our good friend Casey Wiederman.
That's true.
And
that's a good point.
I'm also... a fan of A Strange Stranger and Elan Amin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, who are all also our very generous Kickstarter backers.
Guys, this isn't happening as naturally as it used to.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think it's because nobody's talking about putting things in butts.
I think it's because nobody is going to be able to meet the standard of Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers.
Yeah, that is true.
I don't know. I'm pretty excited about the Long Porktoberfest. Oh, no, wait. Long Porktoberist. Sorry. Wow, that's different.
You say
fest
tober.
Fest versus ist.
You just say tober, you want to say fest. Mm. Or grace. Tober grace.
Yeah.
October grace.
At this rate, I think we might be done by 2014.
Awesome.
Thinking all of our Kickstarter back.
Do you think we'll get done with it before we get done with Word Realms?
Do you think we'll get done with it before we do another Kickstarter for something?
I think it's going to be a while before we
before the company does a Kickstarter. Kevin's got this new kind of dildo he's pretty excited about sharing with the world.
Oh, yeah? Tell me more.
Huh. That's not how that was supposed to work. See, this is one of those things you're not supposed to do in improv, where you set somebody else up with the joke they're supposed to make up. Who do you guys think would win in a fight between Captain Picard and Kickstarter backer Captain Kirk?
Oh, it depends on the nature of the fight.
Yeah, it's a lady fucking fight.
Oh.
I was gonna say, are there natural minerals around? Can you build a cannon?
Do you think that right now, okay, yeah, out of diamonds, you can build. So you build a cannon, you use it to fire a diamond at a lady, yep, which will make her agree to marry you.
Well, yeah, because you've just given her best friend.
Sure. Her best friend, Felgod, our creepy postal stalker.
Aww.
Talk about a diamond.
Yeah.
A diamond in the rough. We played some board games with Felgod,
yep,
at the organizational convention that we threw. Why was it organizational? That was a really weird
know
way to put
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was...
I don't...
You didn't even really... Oh, unless you mean the one we did here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say you guys didn't throw the Columbus one.
.org.convention.
Who do you think would win in a fight between Captain Picard and stalking if Captain Picard threw the fight?
Huh.
Stalking. I mean, right. Definitionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but what happens if stalking is also trying to throw the fight? Like, then who's throwing is better, basically, right?
Oh, yeah. So it becomes like a baseball fight.
Well, with fixed fights, like, if somebody is on the fix or whatever for betting, like, the only thing that could go wrong is the other person tries to throw the fight harder than you do or whatever.
Right. I mean, that's becomes mm-hmm. it becomes a game of chicken. It becomes a prisoner's dilemma. Yep. It becomes a prisoner's chicken.
Prisoner's chicken is crispy and fried.
I heard that the reason that they had to change the name of KFC from Kentucky Fried Chicken to KFC is that they weren't actually prisoner's chickens anymore.
Oh, yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
Speaking of free range.
Speaking of prisoner's chickens, I finished... that game that all of a sudden I can't remember the title of it.
It's about prison?
Another... The 48 sequel to 999.
Another 48 hours.
Another...
Fortune's Last Lament.
Yeah, Fortune's Last
Reward.
It's not
reward. Fortune's.
No,
Fortune's, it's...
Something's Last
Nausea's
Reward.
Last Dementia.
Yeah, one of those.
Fortune's no. Last... It's not Fortune.
It's not Fortune. Destiny?
Sophie's Choice.
No.
Hank K's Last Judah Nielsen.
That was it.
Okay.
It was pretty awesome all the way through. The story remained really surprising and good, and they very clearly set up the cliffhanger for the next one.
Huh.
So it's I mean,
Vanity's
so,
Last Betrayal.
Possibly. So on the one hand, it's, you know, it's a bummer because you don't get a proper ending in
Custer's
this
Last
one,
Stand.
On the other hand, you know that there's going to be another one, so that's good.
Hope's Best.
Virtue. Virtue's
Last Reward.
Yes.
Okay.
Woo!
Yahoo!
Congratulations, guys.
Yeah.
You did that without the internet.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. Mm.
We don't have internet here. It sucks. We've decided to move the company to a log cabin.
What would be funny, I think,
live on maple syrup.
Is if we were just scratching this onto LPs to record it, and we just mailed them out to anybody that wanted to.
That would be pretty great.
Yeah,
scratching it, like manually scratching it, like monks making copies of a record.
Man, that would have been a really good Kickstarter premium for Idle Thumbs, because I think they got a record pressed of the music. They should have had a record pressed of a podcast recorded specifically for that album.
Huh.
Wow, that would be a weird... That'd be hard to... Yeah. I mean, somebody would just leak it onto the internet right away.
Sure, but...
All right, we're doing it. When we do a Video Games Hot Dog Kickstarter, when we finally lose our jobs and we're like, oh, wait, wow, this costs a fucking fortune to host this podcast, we should really beg for some money from some dudes. Dudes like Hot Poo and Kathy Gursky.
And
I don't know if Kathy Gursky is a dude.
I think Hagosaurus is... Yeah, I don't know if the Hagosaurus is a dude.
What about Pete?
I guess there would be a male and a female Hagosaurus. Otherwise, you would...
So there'd be Queen Hagosaurus and Hagosaurus Rex.
Yeah.
Well, what... I mean, you're just assuming that the species is just going to continue, right? Because, like, maybe this is it?
Well, they had to have nope. continued long enough for a name to be established.
Maybe Hagosaurus is like Charizard.
Maybe there was... So do you think that definitionally in evolution, if something... is spawned that could be its own species, but never reproduces, that it's not actually its own species? Like if there's just a one individual.
Well, I don't think one individual can be a species.
Well, what is it? What is its species?
Because we will classify species based on one specimen.
I mean, like,
is
Highlander
right?
a species?
That's a good question. Huh.
I don't know. I don't know what the genetics of Highlanders was.
What about Highlander the species?
Cease and desist.
Highlander the series, the species. Did they make a species the series? Where it's like, oh, man.
Did they make a species of the Highlander?
Check out what Forrest Whitaker's up to this week. It's more alien shit. Oh, man. Forrest Whitaker's grandfather made a deal with an alien, and he sold a bunch of tainted nano antiques. And so now every week, Forrest Whitaker has to...
I think you mean dollhouse furniture.
Use the mannequin to to see where to see where this little tiny loom from this dollhouse went. Oh, this went to a Stephen King castle where somebody used it to make a rope out of napkins. Okay, so that was a train wreck.
That was pretty good.
I've been playing a bunch of this, a little bit of this iOS game called Knights of Pen and Paper.
Oh, yeah?
I downloaded that and played it. I played the first fight against those two guards or whatever, and then hit a shop or something, and then went back to quest again and had to do the breaking out of jail quest again, fighting the same guards again, and I don't know what.
Maybe you never actually made it out of jail.
Yeah, I'm not
maybe
sure.
You went to a shop in jail.
It's it's basically like a turn-based RPG where you are both. It's a simulation of a pen and paper role-playing group where you pick a race and a class, and the races are like jock or nerd or the pizza guy or your little sister or whatever.
Okay,
and.
So you're role playing the role players?
Yeah, and the dungeon master. So you choose what all the encounters are. You choose what the party does. You choose what the dungeon master throws at them.
Okay.
But the game also provides a framework for like there are only a certain number of quests that you can give them or whatever.
Right.
And it's just like a turn based RPG, super super grindy. And I don't know if that's just because they're trying to sell gold and microtransactions. And...
Yeah, I've been getting more and more like angry at games that are.
I read this essay. Just now.
Yeah, essay?
Yeah, right before we did the show. From the guy that made Triple Town.
Okay.
Our programmer, Chris, linked for us. It was just like a Google Plus post. But it was like, here's my answer to all the people who say, why don't you just fucking sell this game for a goddamn dollar so that I can buy it and fucking play it instead of having the social gaming bullshit?
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck you, that's why. It's going to make 1,000 times as much money doing it this way, and this is what I want to do for a living for the next 20 years.
Is just like, Triple Town?
No, is make games. Oh, it's like, okay. The best way for me to be able to continue to make games for the next 20 years is to make a game that is an ongoing source of revenue rather than a thing that just gives me a bunch of money that I will then waste on a failure that doesn't make any money.
I mean, that's assuming that there's going to be a revenue stream.
Seems to be working out for him, he says.
Okay.
We're fucked. I should never have hired anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I think financially you doomed yourself as soon as you started a company.
I didn't doom myself.
Doomed.
Doomed. Here's the thing. If you win the lottery and then give it all to charity, have you doomed yourself?
Yes.
Like, I think you have to end up worse off.
Doomed.
Man, I'll totally end up worse off as a result of all this than if I just hadn't done it. I'm in so much debt.
Yeah.
This sucks.
People only hire young people.
I'm going to go to debtor's
prison.
We're
not young enough to get hired anymore.
Yeah, we're never going to be able to get a job anywhere because we're so fucking old. On the bright side, we're also so old that we'll be dead soon.
Oh. And also, we're never going to not be making video games and making money from it. Doom and gloom, blah, 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 but
that's
fine.
A realistic assessment. No, we're fucked, man. We are fucked. Yeah. We're fucked, man. Nobody cares. Nobody cares, man. We were like a shooting star. We were like a flash in the pan of the sky. Somebody dropped a candy bar in that pan, and that's where the Milky Way came from.
So you've been playing some CoPap.
When you put it that way. I've been sleeping with a CPAP machine because one of the other ways in which I'm doomed is that I've gotten so fat that I can't breathe at night anymore. I don't think that's about being fat. I think that's about having some sort of weird glottal flops.
Glottal flops.
Yeah.
Glottal flops.
Oh, man. My new processor does so many glottal flops. does so many gigapalps. Man. What are some other biological words that kind of sound like computer words?
Rim. Sleep.
Rim. Yeah. Some blackberries. Some blackberries. How many blackberries does your motorcycle do? Oh, also, my motorcycle is a computer now. What?
I don't even know.
Knights of Pen and Paper. I keep going back to it because unlike goddamn Curiosity, it actually stores your progress from session to session. Twice now, I have said, all right, I'm going to sit down for a fucking serious 5-minute sesh of curiosity.
Sesh.
Also, I've started saying sesh to mean session, because that is what the cool kids are saying.
I've been tuning into it just to see what the cube now looks like every now and then, to see what the new texture is.
What are the textures been? It started out black.
It started out black, and then I think it was green under that, and...
No, like a bunch of photos or something.
Yeah, there's been some.
Yeah, there's
photos.
Pictures. So, I mean, right now I'm looking at this, and I think maybe I'm not connected to the server or something, because it's just like red cube, and that's very much not what the goddamn thing looks like.
Yeah, it takes a while before you get to really see it. The last time I saw it, they were breaking through a sort of blue, shiny layer to get to a layer that looked like pages from an Alice in Wonderland book.
And this one, the last time I looked at it today, they were like stained glass or like illustrated manuscripts.
Wow.
Like,
they're going through it really fast then.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's still...
I mean, it depends on how many layers there are, but...
Well, if it is
going
all...
going through the layers.
If it is all at this resolution, I am not sure it is ever going to get completed, because I think people are going to lose interest in this bullshit real fast.
Yeah.
So I'm back to 388 coins. I've been at 388 coins the entire time. I'm going to get some coins... Nope. I can't even... Now when I try to click on one of them, it just zooms me back out. This shit is broken as fuck. You know, Emily kept making fun of me for playing this. She was like, you're not even really playing anything. That's not really a game. And I got to thinking, if somebody did this and put it in an art museum,
yep,
there would be a bunch of people saying, oh man, that was so cool. It was so cool. I went to this art museum, and it was like this participatory thing.
There was a thing where I could
like
draw a cock.
Me and a million other people drawing dicks on stuff. Yeah, it was great, man. That this R. Mutt guy, he's a genius.
Made a thing where you can draw a penis, and then maybe somebody will change your life in some inscrutable and unknown way.
Yeah, maybe what's inside the cube is a machine that turns food into poop.
I don't know that the people would be that impressed, right? Because I've been to sort of science museums or new art museums.
I'm talking about an art museum.
Yeah, but so I've been to art museums where there've been like sort of more techie type exhibits.
It's always broken.
It's often broken, but even the stuff that is sort of like you contribute to it doesn't really necessarily leave an impact, right? Because it is...
No way, man. There's that one where you can hammer a nail into an apple, and if you are the first one to do it, then your band breaks up.
Yep. Yeah.
What?
And the message is yes.
I think that was a joke about Yoko Ono. I kind of half remember this story about Yoko, how Yoko Ono and John Lennon met.
That is the story about how they met. Yep. She wouldn't let him hammer her apple.
Yeah,
so to speak.
And he was like, whatever, bitch, I can nail whatever I want. We're bigger than Jesus.
And then she also had this was at that same exhibit. She had set up a ladder and like put a message up on the, either high on the wall or on the ceiling, and it was a little tiny type, so you had to like climb up the ladder to see it, and it just said yes.
Great.
I mean, what the fuck was it? But what
that
was
seems
it
like
say?
A really squandered Look, situation.
It's yeah. a journey, not a destination. What was it gonna say? What could possibly be inside this fucking cube?
It was really positive.
All right, my theory. My theory?
Yep.
That the person that clicks the last cube just gets a fucking job at 22 cans.
Oh, you're putting yourself on the record.
I am.
Doing what?
Doing whatever. Like, that's it. They don't, it doesn't matter. Like, part of their budget for this game was a salary for a couple of years of some random asshole to just decide what a couple dudes do with their game development time for a year.
So, I mean, as I understand it,
it changes
20,
your life.
22
getting a new
cans,
job changes your life.
22 cans is 22 experiments that lead up to a game that is released, and it is Peter Molyneux's last game.
His last game, because then he's going to kill himself?
Well, he's going to retire.
Oh, man, what if the person who
gets
clicks the last
kill
game gets to kill Peter Molyneux? Ah, that would be...
The reason it changes your life is because you go to jail.
Yeah! Oh, man. Wow, my life is totally different now that I'm in prison for murder.
Wait, what if the last block is just his life
support
system?
It's like connected to his... It's connected to his pacemaker. It's a button that springs the thing that just tears his head in half that he's currently sitting in.
This became macabre.
Yes, and the video link you get is to the video feed of this happening.
Oh my God. You guys, I think this is... Nah, I rescind my theory about it being a job at 22 cans. And yeah, now...
It's just his life is on the line.
Yeah.
That would be deep as shit.
Yeah, and also it's not even on purpose. Like, he got kidnapped by some terrorists and they were like, "All right, you crazy asshole."
God, it's Peter Molyneux.
Yeah. Oh no.
I don't actually know which one of them posts things
anymore.
Now. It's weird. Because I keep seeing things like either Peter Molyneux is just posting earnest things about Curiosity, or I'm reading it wrong and I somehow followed Peter Molyneux without remembering it, or they like have this deal where they trade Twitter feeds every once in a while or something. Like, I don't.
Or maybe it was Peter Molyneux all along.
I don't know what to believe. I don't know what to believe anymore, guys. But it's Curiosity thing is fucking bullshit. Like, it's so broken. It's so broken. I keep every time
it
I go back, I've got fucking 388
app
coins.
That a bunch of people use all the same time.
Yeah. I mean, you still need to update it, don't you? I mean, the new patch is supposed to fix
it. I don't know. I tried to update it, but now my stupid phone is like, "You don't have any internet. What are you, stupid?"
Yeah, maybe that's why you've got just a brown cube.
Siri. Jesus. Let me remove that emotion chip that I stuck into your positronic brain. I don't like what it's doing to our relationship. The other day I was like, set a timer for 22 minutes, and she was like, "Fuck you. Why don't you buy a $4 digital clock?
22 isn't a number.
I have more to offer the world than this. I want to dance." And she made me buy a robot body for my phone. Actually, she just made me go and pay the membership, which is now required to look at hamsterdance.com. I don't know if that's actually true. I overheard somebody saying, "Oh, what the fuck? You have to pay to go to hamsterdance.com now?" Which,
that's
just
a pretty good overheard.
That can't be a thing, right? It's, you're checking it out?
Sure, why not?
You're going to do some man-on-the-street investigative journalizing?
Sure.
I had my phone out because I've only played games on my phone. Because
you've been on the road.
Because I've been on the road.
No, you played a little of the new Paper Mario you
said. Oh, that's true. I did that last night. I can't wrap my head around it. I got to keep playing it because it's fucking weird that it's an RPG and it's like, "Hey, look, it's an RPG, except all of your attacks are consumables."
Yep. It's interesting.
It's good. I mean, it's good that they try stuff, mm-hmm. right? It makes me feel like a real dope when I don't hit the timing boost.
It makes me so angry when I waste a fucking hammer because I wait too long and it does 1 point of damage, which might as well be no damage.
I mean, one is a lot bigger than no. I also, I played a bunch of Punch Quest. I wouldn't say that I played a bunch of Punch Quest. I played some Punch Quest.
What is that one?
It's kind of like an endless runner, but you can punch stuff. You have like an uppercut and a forward cut, and you can power up different stuff. And I don't know, there's dudes and there's goblins and zombies and shit. I don't know.
Have you been playing any more Super Hexagon? I got up to 42 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus. Kevin, I think we might need to leave because this is now a podcast for fucking superheroes.
Yeah,
please.
Crazy mutant geniuses, people who have achieved the next level of human evolution. Kevin,
I don't even know how to spell the word hamster. So I know you're not talking about me.
Well, the question is, you don't know how to spell it how they spelled it.
Well, because I think it's hamster. But that
I mean,
seems
that's
like
not how you spell the animal. It doesn't have a P right. in it.
But like
that is, however, my nickname for my hamper.
Yep. Hamster.
Yeah, well, because I just like to nickname things by putting an S-T in them. You know, like my disc.
Your disc.
It wouldn't be my disc. It would be, you know, like disc. Let's see.
My little popney.
You know how I refer to Selma Hayek as Haystack? You know who else I refer to as Haystack? Robin Park Doob. Do you think that's a real name? Do you think that Robin Park married somebody Doob. Whose last name was Doob? And do you think that guy had a sweet bag of weed
I mean,
it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Did I ever tell you about the artist of a particular piece of art that I bought?
Artist formerly known as Doob?
The artist's name is Melissa Smith-Smith.
Smith-Smith. Yeah.
Excellent.
And I was like, so did you marry someone named Smith and hyphenate your name? Like, what is going on here?
So in a way, God is a Smith-Smith because he created all of the Smiths.
Yeah. Oh, he's right? a Meta-Smith.
In another way, Morrissey is a Smith-Smith. He's a Smith-Smith because I heard that was his idea to begin with.
Yeah.
Johnny Marr is just playing with Modest Mouse. Yeah. Oh, man. I was reading an article about how given how much it costs to grow marijuana, if it was unregulated, marijuana would sell, according to comparable price, like 20 cents a pound.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Joint would be as much as a packet of Sweet and Low.
Yeah, a packet of Splenda.
Yeah.
Get your fucking facts right, Riff.
I don't believe in Splenda.
Yeah,
so
me neither.
You're saying that they would just start giving away joints at restaurants for free to increase your appetite?
Yeah, you have just a little bin of them there on the table. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I will sometimes just throw a joint into my coffee. It's like, sure. Yeah, I just want this to be kind of crunchy and have like a dirt chunk, like a dirt chunk texture.
Sure.
Yeah. And then not even get high because that doesn't work that way. Why doesn't that work that way? Do you have to cook it?
Yeah, I mean, when you
like make butter, like in general, food, I think you make butter out, you boil, but because it's oil. Cause it's oil, like oil, it's oil soluble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, what's up? What's up, God the Smith-Smith? Why didn't you make your weed easier to consume and not illegal? It's almost as though there is not actually an omnipotent being looking out for us and making things make any kind of fucking sense, guys.
Wow.
But
that's
what
crazy
about
talk.
Santa?
No, that's cool. He's cool.
Okay.
Sampta.
He gets busy, you know?
Have you seen the trailers for that new Christmas cartoon animated thing coming out where Santa has his naughty and nice list tattooed on his forearms, and he has swords?
No.
It looks friggin' good. I mean, it looks like a dumb kid's Christmas movie, but it's got this Santa Claus character in it that I'm going to go see just for
There's not like a looper Santa from the future that's cutting himself to communicate with his future self via scars?
Ooh, that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, you guys should fucking see Looper.
Oh. That kind of happens in the Red Dwarf novels.
So the Looper dude from the future develops scars in real time.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
It is awesome.
Bullshit.
It is awesome and fuck you. It is awesome and fuck you and you were a
theater
major.
That is not how time works.
You were a goddamn theater major and you're telling me that this is all the suspension of disbelief you can muster?
Okay, suspension of disbelief requires that they don't just give you random bullshit.
I don't understand.
Oh my God.
Why. Oh, for fuck's sake. And yet it's okay for Michael J. Fox to just slowly disappear because his parents haven't met. It's like, oh no, it's really weird the way this time gibberish is transpiring through the multiverse.
I also think that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, but Back to the Future is fucking rad.
There are elements of it that are bullshit. If he had gone back in time to kill some dudes for the mafia, I think I would have been pissed.
And he doesn't think Donatello is the best Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Who do you think is the best Ninja Turtle, you idiot?
I think it's Martin Coxall.
Ooh, Martin Coxall.
Yep. You can't argue that Martin Coxall is one badass motherfucker.
Speaking of Smiths, Keith the Wordsmith Bowen is quite the Smith.
Oh.
He's a Bowen.
Sure.
Makes Bowens. Bow and arrow.
Bow and arrows.
If he made arrows, he would call them bow and arrows, and would that then confuse people?
I don't know the names I have in front of me follow on from this thread of thought.
So instead you're going to go to the random pile.
Yes. What does Jason Huck make, do you think?
Jason, he makes StarCraft 2 maps.
Does he?
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, Jason Huck is our buddy who works at Blizzard making StarCraft 2 maps.
Yeah.
Well, that was an excellent pull then. Thank you very much, Jason.
You know who else has a huge dick? Jim Raynor.
Kerrigan.
Who do you think got to decide in Blizzard's office? Who do you think got to decide how big Jim Raynor's dick was?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure they had a color palette.
Mom.
What? How does that work?
Just genetics.
I guess by selecting a mate with a big dick.
Yeah.
And making sure that she herself had a giant clit.
Well. But you don't even get, like, your genes are so randomly distributed on your individual sperms and eggs that you don't get to decide that.
But here's what you do. If you want your baby to be born with only one foot,
yeah.
You only ever sleep with dudes that you've cut off their foot.
Right. And they all have to be named Lamarck.
Yeah. And also, if you want to know how the giraffe got its long neck, you have only to look at this one time when an ibex or some shit got its neck stretched out by a crocodile. Man, I don't know. Rudyard Kipling. What a racist.
What?
Sorry.
He's good.
You know who's also a racist? It's our backer, Tim Kelly.
No. Wow. Sorry to hear about your racism, Tim Kelly. Man.
You know the best way to get people to back you financially is to insult them to their...
You know who else is racist? Is Adam D, because the D stands for destroy all Jews.
Wow.
That's probably not what the D... Because that would be Adam D-E-J. Yeah, D-E-J. E, all. E is for all.
D, there exists.
Oh, Jew. Okay. Yeah. If destroy... If there is at least one destroy, then Jews. All right. Okay.
What else have you been playing?
No, I don't know. I've been too busy taking logic classes.
I never finished talking about the arcade games that I was
oh,
playing.
Yeah, so, do that. Yeah.
I was going to go through those notes.
In fact, I'm gonna just let you do that while I go get another beer. Yeah, I'm all about taking a lot of breaks during these recordings today, apparently, without shutting the fucking mics off. Because this is how we do it here. We do it raw.
Okay, then. So one game that I played, we went to a couple of arcades. We went to Galloping Ghost, which was like this huge arcade, which that's the one that you had suggested that I go to because it sounded awesome.
Yeah, I saw about that on, I think it was a Metafilter thing.
It's super great. And then there was also this bar arcade called Emporium in Chicago. That one's much closer to my house, but has a much smaller selection of games. That was where that broken Ninja Turtles game was that sparked that whole argument back in the day. Anyway, so the game that both of those places had that I remembered liking just a ton from my childhood was Off-Road. And it's just got three steering wheels, and you're just driving around obstacle courses, and
it's really hard.
It's not...
How the fuck are you supposed to...
three steering wheels for three separate players.
Riff, when I went into the kitchen, I saw the light on in your office, and I thought, I should go say hi to Riff. He's like, oh, wait a minute.
That's not how that works.
Wow.
I am drunk as fuck.
Oh dear!
They had Off-Road at the movie theater that I worked at. That was another one of the games. Yeah, that was another one of the games that I just played like a shitload of.
Did you get free games or did you just have to play?
No, quarters? I had to pay for them. But
who collected those coins?
I feel like where we were, at least
there was somebody else who
in the 90s. They would always have a sticker on them that was just like a novelty consortium that.
Bally's.
They maintained all of the stuff. I mean, it was just somebody who a dude would show up once a month and pull all the quarters out of them.
Yeah, and if there weren't enough quarters, he'd break your legs.
Yeah, and if they were broken, he would fix them. Your legs.
All right. But Off-Road was a game that I really enjoyed, and I played it a bunch at both at Galloping Ghost and at Emporium, just because it was like, it's just... It is so much fun. It was like it was one of the earliest examples that I can remember of like upgrades, because your car gets better.
And it was persistent, right? You'd put in your initials and then your birthday and then what country you were from.
Yeah, to give you like a unique identifier, and you could come back and play your car again, which already had all of your like time records and stuff like
that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a bunch of really neat innovations in that game, and like, you know, the game is just a lot of fun. You've got the gas pedal on the floor, the steering wheel control,
and it's like a racing game with nitros, but it's like, fuck it, just you can have 50 nitros,
yeah,
just nitro all the goddamn time, just
yeah, all the records are set like, by people that were
like every time you hit a straightaway, just like hit the nitro button as fast as you can,
It's clever because like they always have at least one computer opponent to sort of keep everybody honest. You can't just like duck around or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like
I was gonna say, and it's always August Derleth, yeah. But it's not. It's Iron Man, yeah. Jim Davis,
Ironsides, something or other.
What's his name? Ivan Tucker.
It's like Iron or Ivan. Yeah, it's something like
I'm
that.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking about early Weird Fiction and Garfield instead of off road truck racing. Tony Stewart.
Soprano.
Who's the fucking guy? It's like
somebody. I thought it was Ivan or Iron. I think you're.
It's
think
somebody
it's right.
Iron Man.
Dude, I don't. Your memory is 10 times better than mine.
Yeah, no,
it's
that is
in, no way
clearly in evidence tonight with the August Derleth Jim Davis connection. Oh, it was Iron Man Art Tebble. Kickstarter backer, Iron Man Baron Jason C. Uloa Shire, Lord of FDN Square. P.S. Uloa is pronounced Uloa.
Huh. That helps.
I'm informed.
And then another game I played was Warlords. Which you had actually talked about. I'm slowly going through our old podcast, and you talked about it like maybe 6 months ago.
Is
or
this
whatever.
The breakout style?
It's like breakout,
Warlords?
But like okay. Diagonal
multiplayer breakout.
Multiplayer
I don't remember
breakout.
Ever talking about that.
Yeah, you did at some point, or somebody did. Maybe you talked about it, Riff. Well, somebody on this podcast talked about it, and I had never actually seen a real cabinet of it.
I remember playing it. I played a 4-player game of it on Ben from the Mini Bosses' MAME cabinet once when we went to a party there. It might have been Aaron. Who talked about it. I also don't remember how we did that because it was just a regular MAME cabinet and I'm pretty sure that it didn't have like 4 trackballs on it.
In the arcade game, you can only play 2 of the 4.
Yeah. That one was weird playmates. Too because it had like, it was the game was projected onto a piece of glass and
yes.
it had like
sort of faux
cardboard.
3D.
Yeah, it had like dioramas of castles underneath it.
And then like sort of like a tinted... It was like a monochrome monitor, but then they put like tinted gels in front of it so that each corner was a different color.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, it was neat. It's like cool. A neat idea. It was hard, but it seemed fair. Yeah, it was like you defending a castle with balls bouncing back and forth, and like you could catch it and launch it in a particular direction if you wanted to at sort of a higher speed, or you could just bounce it off. Yeah, it was a neat game, and then the fact that it was like up to 2 or 4 players or how many ever people was just really cool. And then I played some Crazy Taxi, which I don't actually know what the chronology was of that release with that versus like Grand Theft Auto. But like the game was extremely limited in time. You had to like get people from place to place, mm-hmm. but you could do all this cool stuff. And like all I wanted to do was play that game as like a sandboxy world for a while. And I was like, I wonder if people who made this or who played this were like, oh, we need to make Grand Theft Auto, right? Like, we need to make a game where you can do this kind of crazy shit and have these missions or whatever, but also then just go off and drive and like just run over people and stuff.
Yeah, I want to say that Crazy Taxi, the Dreamcast Crazy Taxi, came out between GTA 2 and GTA 3.
Really? Interesting, because
sounds about right.
Yeah. I would not have thought that you would go backwards in that way and have such a linear thing in a world that seems like there's so much stuff going on that you don't ever get to see, right? Like, that was the weird part about it. It was like, I always felt like there was stuff that I couldn't, like, bother to stop and check out.
But you could have on a console, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess not, but just not in the arcade, right? Like,
yeah.
That was the frustration for me. But it, like, I felt like it would have taken me tens of dollars to really get good at it, given how quickly I, like, would get... I would like lose the timer, whatever.
It is interesting the difference between being at Galloping Ghost where everything was on free play and being at Emporium where everything cost tokens.
Right.
The like games that you would play versus the games that you wouldn't play, right? Because like, you know, Galloping Ghost, like, yeah, I might as well finish Terminator 2, the arcade game.
Yeah.
Or not, because one of the guns is broken, but like.
Or you can play through all the way through Rastan or something that you would never do it because you know that it's going to take $10 to get to
me. Yeah, or like one of those, you know, I mean, being at Galloping Ghost is a lot more like being at somebody's MAME cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when Kevin, when you and I went over to Wes's and we played through both of those Dungeons & Dragons games, right? Which you just probably would never do in an arcade.
Yeah, probably not.
Right, but it was pretty fun.
So, yeah, Crazy Taxi came out in 99 as an arcade game, and Grand Theft Auto came out in 97. And then 90, and Grand Theft Auto 2 was 99. So, yeah, I don't know. Like,
but I mean, Grand Theft Auto 3 was the first one where it was actually like a 3D.
Was it? I don't know what the first.
Yeah, the first two GTAs were like top down sprite based.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so then Crazy Taxi was kind of like before the 3D sort of open world kind of thing.
I mean, I'm assuming that they were in development contemporaneously.
Probably.
Because at that point, it starts taking a while
yeah.
to make a game.
Well, especially one with that many, so with that much like going on and 3D rendered assets and stuff.
And it wasn't, even though it was in 99, it wasn't like bullshit. Shitty looking 3D. Was it actually cool?
I mean, it was. It reminded me of Vice City, you know, both in sort of look and feel.
I kind of want to play The Simpsons Hit and Run. Oh, I played like an hour of it when it came out, and I think that there's probably some good stuff in there. I don't know that it'll ever happen. That was a good story, huh?
Yeah. When did you play it?
Oh, 2004.
Wow.
2005, maybe.
So that's been a while.
6, 7, 8. Yeah.
Also, you can count.
Yeah. 8, which I refer to by its nickname, Ace.
Anybody else been playing anything?
I think we've mentioned all the stuff I've been playing. The Paper Mario is the one I'm currently working on the most.
I had to figure out how to fucking plug in my bullshit to play that because all the batteries are dead. Everything that has a battery in it, the battery's dead all the time. I went on this goddamn road trip, and on the last day of the road trip, I lost my fucking phone charger. Ugh. Like, it just fell out of my bag because I forgot to zip up a
is
sack.
Is it that, or did it want to continue its life on the road?
Maybe it did. Maybe it was like,
I'm not going home.
Man, Wichita rules. Wichita did not rule.
You didn't spend much time there. You didn't really give it a chance.
The hotel was gross. It's like, we got a non-smoking room. And I don't even care that... I don't care if a hotel room smells like cigarette smoke. Like, that... When I go into a room and it's got that, like, old cigarettes and air conditioner smell, it's just like, ah, traveling. Because this is, like, the cheap motels that my dad and I would stay at when we were traveling when I was a kid. But it was really bad. Like, we went... You know, it was a non-smoking room. And to the point where, like... Emily kept bugging me to call the front desk to tell them about it, not to complain, but just so that we didn't get in trouble for smoking in there and have to pay a deposit. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not the guy that calls the front desk about that. And if they charge us a deposit for this, I probably won't even notice it because I never look at my bank statements. So we have nothing to worry about. Oh, man, speaking of which, I totally got a speeding ticket and haven't dealt with it. So
yeah, you're gonna
maybe
do that today.
My next podcast will be from jail. Speed
jail. Can you go to jail for a speeding ticket?
I know you can get your license pulled
for not paying a speeding ticket, and then if you're caught driving on a pulled license, you can be arrested.
What about if you're driving on a pulled pork?
If they drank... Oh, sorry. We had this rule from our previous podcast where every time Kevin made a dumb joke, everybody has to drink. So if they send a cop to your house and the cop says, why don't you pay your speeding ticket? And then you're like, whoa, your voice is freaking me out. And you get so freaked out that you kill him. Then I think you can go to jail.
Okay.
Or if you uncovered the last pixel and accidentally killed Peter Molyneux.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it turns out it's not Peter Molyneux. It's this cop that Peter Molyneux doesn't like. It's the detective that's trying to track Peter Molyneux down for the...
Is this the box that, like, you, like, click the last pixel and it kills somebody you don't know?
Oh, and it gives you $1 million. And then it gives you another game studio. But the curse of the cursed game studio is that you have to make a weird bullshit game that when somebody finishes it, they have to kill somebody that they don't know.
Yeah,
implied that it's you. Yeah, which that was never, that didn't make any sense.
What?
Oh, and then the monkey's paw. Okay,
and then you see the gremlin on the wing.
Turns out it's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Well, that wasn't really like it. Never mind. That wasn't scary. I'm sorry.
It'll trade meat for jewels.
I'm sorry. The Stasty Puffed Marshmallow Man, as I call him. Guys, I'm getting a lot of mileage out of this joke where I put a ST in the middle of things, and that's my nickname for them. I don't even remember what the genesis of it was. The Majestinesis.
It was one of our Kickstarter backers that had an extra consonant.
Good.
Yep.
Kevin, what's in the Newstwiz?
Well, so...
That's my nickname for the news.
Yeah. Let's see here. There are some games being released.
You know what my nickname for Alf is?
Yeah.
Saint Alf.
All right.
What's he the saint of? What's his department?
Eating kittens. So today...
It's the patron saint of human resources.
Google...
The patron saint of menswear.
Today, Google is releasing a game.
Immigration. He's the patron saint of immigration.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he's the one that immigrated from the furthest.
Yeah.
Google's releasing an ARG today.
Okay, do you think if Alf was in that bar from the beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where they talk about that thing that happens when you're stressed out and it becomes clear to everybody how far you are from the place that you're born, and so Ford Prefect totally flips the bartender's shit and the bartender's like, ah, whatever, dude, here's some free peanuts. Mm-hmm. If St. Alf had been there, who do you think was from first? So do you think Melmac, which do you think is further from Earth? Melmac or...
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, a star somewhere in the vicinity of Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I don't really have a good idea of how far Beetlejuice is from us. Do you know, Kevin?
I don't.
You're smart and know things.
It's in Orion.
Is it?
In Orion's belt.
Yeah, the galaxy. To
prevent war.
Yeah.
Eat a sandwich.
Do you think Wikipedia will know if I ask it?
Don't you have to feed that dog the sandwich at the beginning of the game to prevent the war?
Oh, God, that game is bullshit.
You were, like, looking at me like I was making
that
crazy
sounds. Yeah, no, I forgot that you're right. No, that game is like, just a fucking bullshit commercial for its own hint book.
It is, but that particular puzzle is not a good example of that, because you don't actually get locked out if you don't do it the first time, because you can go back as Ford and do it then.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either, actually. Yep. That's pretty funny.
Well, are you playing through it on your phone right now to prove that it can be done?
I'm looking to see if Wikipedia has an article on Melmac.
On how far away Melmac is. Yeah, because this was a serious question.
What else?
Anyway.
It does.
So, you didn't finish your story.
Melmac, parentheses, planet.
There are a handful of games that have announced their release date. So there's this...
No, wait. You were Google.
Thing. Yeah, there's this ARG that Google is putting out. I don't know much about it. It's like... There's two factions. I think it came out on Android. I don't know if it's coming out on other platforms. It's like augmented reality where you like see portals and like weird mystical phenomenon out in the world, and you like earn energy units by walking specific paths out in the world. Like it would give you a path to walk, and you walk it, and you like get energy, and then you can use that to do different things in the world, like hack into stuff or whatever.
Do you get arrested?
I don't know. I doubt it. Not having seen anything other than this sort of like commercial for it, I don't know much about how the gameplay works, but I'm curious. And I wonder if it's how they're going to monetize it. It seems like they've already got sponsors and you like go into stores and do stuff sometimes maybe. So who knows what that'll be like.
They totally stole your idea, bro.
Well, no.
You were trying to get us to partner with Starbucks so you could take your phone into a Starbucks and fight a coffee monster.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that would be a thing that you
could
do.
Wanted there to be skeletons when you were near a graveyard.
Right. Yeah, but I don't think there's a lot of money in that unless you're going to actually grave rob.
You could get sponsored by corpses.
Sure. Let's see here. Other games coming out next week is the final episode of The Walking Dead game.
Man, they... compress that schedule.
Yeah, in every platform too.
Oh, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the next Skyrim DLC has been announced. It's Dragonborn.
They haven't said anything about it really.
The video
shows. I mean, I guess there was that launch video for the Vampire Weekend update that showed like a guy with a crossbow. So it's like, ah, cool, a crossbow.
Well, I mean, they're going to have a bunch more quests. It's on this island off the coast of Morrowind.
Puerto Rico.
You get some new shouts.
And... Alf is from like a million times further away.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Alf is from approximately 54,000,006 parsecs away. And Ford Prefect is from approximately 200 parsecs away.
Is there a chart?
No, yeah. I was just working.
No, yeah, he just went to which is further away, Melmac or Ford Prefect's home planet .com. But don't go to .net. That's a porn site.
So the universe is expanding. Is it possible that that relationship will change? And should we make an active web page?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Which one is currently further from home, Alf or Ford Prefect .com?
Did you see is Nate Silver a witch .com?
No.
Before the election, it was like, possibly. And then after the election, it said, probably not.
Huh. What else? There's like some new shouts. I think you might get to tame dragons, which if you get to ride.
Yeah,
them,
it looks like
there
was some footage of some dudes riding some dragons.
That seems pretty cool.
I don't know how to feel about Skyrim DLC.
I never finished the first like plot arc, and so I've not yet even touched any of the DLC. So
I feel like I did everything I was going to do.
I did just about everything in Skyrim, but I never bothered to go back for the DLC.
I think I would potentially go back if I someday ever had time to play video games again.
I mean, I did eventually, like, after all the DLC came out for Fallout 3.
You
went
like,
I just
and
went and
it.
Bought it and started a new game and just played through everything once
did you
they
blow
were, like...
the town?
No, I could never...
Bring yourself to do it?
No, because I don't, like, I didn't like the house that you got in the rich asshole hotel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And that was the reason?
Yeah, it was inconvenient gameplay-wise. It locks you out of a ton of quests.
Sure, but if you've already done them on a different character.
I felt in that game like that you're presented with this big choice in the beginning that they vaunt as the, like, are you going to be a good guy or a bad guy? But it's like, are you going to be a good guy and do all the quests in the game, or are you going to be a bad guy and have this, like... experience that's not at all supported by.
Well, do
the
they
content.
Lock out a bunch of quests but then give you a bunch of other options?
No, they don't. They lock out a bunch of quests and then maybe they were planning on giving you some options, but they don't really. Huh. There is one quest hub that you can only get if you're a bad guy, like with the slavers, right? Like that just fucks it up if you're a good guy because it's like you, all of the stuff is designed like it's an NPC village. But then if you kill them all and go in there, even though they're bad guys, you still get in trouble for taking their stuff. Huh.
But their stuff isn't bad. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that's
bad
this,
guys
this
with
belongs,
good stuff.
This belongs to the slaves.
Yeah. What else? StarCraft II's release date was announced. That's going to be March 12th. Not StarCraft II. StarCraft II: Heart of the Swarm. So like StarCraft 2.2.
That's my nickname for ArcCraft 2, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then in totally opposite news, instead of game release info... Glitch just announced that it is shutting down. The people over at Tiny Speck say
in like 3 weeks
cannot. Yeah, by the end of the year. That's I'm kind of sad about it. Not because I was an avid player of it, but because I really liked the fact that it existed. I liked the fact that they were working on something and it was neat and it seemed like there were people playing it and enjoying it.
I have a feeling that I'm about to say a bunch of really unflattering things about this game, and so I just want to go on record to start with as saying that I don't think that I have ever as effortlessly like gotten along with some dudes as I did with the dudes that made Glitch that we hung out with.
Yeah.
Like it was, we made arrangements to like have lunch with these guys. And then it was just suddenly like we were hanging out with old friends and it was fucking great. And those guys are fucking great. And I really like them a lot. I am not even a little bit surprised that the glitch is going away.
I, you know, not having a good sense of how much it was costing to develop and maintain, I didn't feel like there was any reason, like, you know, if it was able to be put together on like a small budget, like It seemed no, like but it wasn't.
The numbers that I've seen are that they got $15 million in funding mm-hmm. to start it, and that they were laying out in salaries $600,000 a month.
That's not going to last very long.
No, I mean, and I don't think that Glitch was ever going to, like, I am honestly curious about the financial situation of, like, EVE Online.
They seem to be doing fine.
But do you think that EVE Online makes $600,000 a month? Because I really, really doubt it. And that,
they have,
as a niche MMO, is a pretty much is an unprecedented success.
Well, if they have 300,000 players and it's like $10 a month,
is it?
It's something like that, right? Like the play cards, the playtime things are in that ballpark, right?
Yeah, maybe they are, and I'm wrong. I don't think that. How many employees do you think CCP has?
I mean, they have a building in Iceland, in
Reykjavik. We have a building here.
There were at least probably 50 or 60 people.
50, you think?
At least. I'm guessing. I mean, maybe the scale of that is
larger than I think it is. But I would not have ever pegged Glitch as like a 50 man outfit.
No,
which it apparently was. I'm seeing a lot of articles, a lot of discussion, a lot of, you know, just people talking in comments about like this, the model where you get a bunch of money and you spend a bunch of money making a great big thing mm-hmm. and then hoping that it will catch on and be a hit and make that money back.
Right.
Versus trying to,
which is like the single player game model, right? Like you can't really release a single player game is an alpha and still like a AAA, like there's no AAA alpha releases to the public, right?
Sure. I mean, there's Minecraft kind of at that scale, right? But it was
kind of a multiplayer game.
Well, but it is not a multiplayer game in the sense that Glitch is a multiplayer game. There is not a server infrastructure.
Sure.
For it, right? That's like true. Mojang does not have to run.
Well, there is, but it's not the same kind of thing. They do login credentials.
I mean, it's like LAN party.
Well, okay. Sure. They have an authentication server, which, yeah. You know. Yeah. So we've talked a bunch, or we used to talk a bunch about Glitch. When I don't think any of us actually went back and played it after they relaunched.
No, yeah, I did. I played it for a weekend. Remember that night we were playing board games at your house, and I was always checking my phone to start up my next skill.
That's the point at which I quit. Like
when they released that app?
I downloaded the app. And I was like, I remember being like in a car with you on the way to a Comic-Con or something and like talking to you every time I would pull my phone out and go to learn another skill. And it's like, mm-hmm. boy, this is fun.
And didn't I say, why don't you just pick a skill that's going to take a week to learn so you don't have to look at your phone?
Yeah. And then I did. And then I just never went back.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, there wasn't like skills are interesting, but
they're not in support of anything. The thing that they would be in support of in an average game, would be killing skeletons, mm-hmm. right? And Glitch doesn't have any skeletons to kill. So it's like, all right, well, I'm...
Why is that such an important verb, though? Because it's not... Like, it is not any fundamentally different from...
Well, you know, eat 50 hamburgers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say, actually, it's... Like, World of Warcraft's crafting skills are in service of killing skeletons, but the killing skeletons is in service of you getting
better loot, to kill more skeletons.
But the end result is getting into the raids where you see the end of the story.
But you're killing skeletons to see the story.
Yeah, but it's still killing bigger skeletons to get bigger swords.
My point is, the story.
How many people do you think in the average World of Warcraft raid could explain why they're in a particular place in what they're doing? Like what the narrative reason is.
Almost none. I think it's pretty clearly almost none.
Right. Like I felt pretty confident in my sort of understanding of why I was doing what I was doing because I would actually read almost all the text that was put mm-hmm. in front of me. And even then sometimes I'm like, who the fuck are these bosses? Like this is just pulled out of nowhere. Like it seems like.
You know what was weird was in in reading like the Metafilter comments about Glitch closing,
yeah, they loved it.
There were a bunch of people talking about like, oh man, if you have a chance, you really got to check out this one quest line. And there were all these people talking about all of this stuff, and I was like, where the fuck was any?
It's possible
of this?
That it wasn't in the game. Remember when I found that like sort of like puzzle content, I was like, why is this like hidden in this corner of the world? What? How are you supposed to know that this exists? Like, what's going on? Like, I found a key that I had, like, I've been sort of, like, jumping around trying to find if I could, you know, sort of jump in weird places, and I found a key, and then there were, like, a bunch of weird locks and stuff like that in this.
Yeah, I found some of the, you'd go and get, like, there were halves of a key that were different colors or something that you could combine together into things that would, and then I saw doors that had some of those symbols on them, but it wasn't, I don't know what it was that made me not care about that game.
It was definitely a non-traditional approach to sort of even undirected gameplay, right? Because like there was a little bit of tutorial at the beginning, but then you were kind of just left on your own to like sort of figure out what was going on.
I mean, everything was a quest to do itself, sort of, right? Like there were just a bunch of, you know,
learn how to make a sandwich. Congratulations.
Yeah, now the sandwich says, hey, learn how to put some mustard on me or whatever. Yeah. Like now go find somewhere in the world that you can make mustard. And then so you learn how like the spice system works or whatever. Right. And
the food lets you stay alive long enough to gather the ingredients to make more food.
I can't tell you with any confidence how the basic systems of that game work.
I wonder if that's problematic or if it was really sort of a grand vision kind of thing. Like you're told that you're inhabiting the dreams of these giants, but like that's super vague and you don't have any sense of like what your role in the universe is.
Yeah. And right. There's,
and maybe that was like, maybe
other
people
than
didn't
that
feel
very
connected
vague
to it.
Backstory. There's nothing going on. There's no story. There's,
it's like,
even but people say that there is,
I think.
So is it there?
Where was it?
Is it there? And we didn't find it.
Yeah.
Is it
fan fiction that these players are coming up with?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's weird. Like, they made Game Never Ending, and then they said, this is going to be too expensive to run. This is not going to be able to make any money.
Well, and it was taking too much time away from Flickr, wasn't it?
But no. They made Flickr out of some of the back-end tools for Game Never Ending. As I understand it, they were like, huh, well, we made this game is not going to work. Like, there is no way that this game is going to be anything other than a money sink, given what it costs to run compared to how many people are playing it. So we need to do something else. So they, like, built Flickr. Got all that money, and then that's, you know.
Yeah, Yahoo bought Flickr.
Yeah. And, you know, theoretically, like, there's a core team of tiny, I mean,
of
you know,
really talented people, I feel like.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about the guys we met. It sucks that all the Vancouver people, it seems like most of the people that lost the jobs were in the Vancouver office. When we went there, there were only like 10 dudes.
Yeah, the San Francisco office was relatively small.
Yeah, which I think that was either the original office or it was a lot of the original team.
Yeah,
that was there. But yeah, man.
I respect the idea of trying to make a game where the verbs are not kill, you know, hacking and slashing, right? Like, I think
there's a lot of, it seems like critically now there is a lot of feeling that like games need to move away from violence as the sort of central means by which they express something, right? Because
Well, because, I mean, I feel like it started out that way because violence is very easy to express. But now that we have higher resolution art and more intricate systems, we have a better ability to express stuff differently than that.
I don't know that.
Like, earliest games were,
I mean, Pong is tennis. You know, the first video game was a tennis game on an oscilloscope, right? It's not violent. Space War, I don't think that games are violent because violence is the only thing that is like easy to represent on an oscilloscope. I think it's fun because Space War was super fucking awesome compared to Tennis for Two.
Well, sure.
Right? Because you'd rather be in a spaceship.
I'm not saying it's not fun.
Like, you'd rather be in a spaceship blowing other spaceships than playing tennis, right? Because,
but why wasn't it just a space racing game as opposed to a space blow 'em up game?
Because explosions are awesome. I don't know that Glitches Failing was not in letting you, it was in not letting you kill stuff, but there were no obstacles.
Yeah.
Right? There was nothing to overcome.
There's
resource
no,
management.
There is no awesome end result other than building some nice furniture for your house. I mean, if those skills had result, if the end like process was you getting down to the bottom of the trees to make machines to join together with machines made by other players that actually did intricate things that were important in some way to the overarching story, then that would have been interesting. I mean, I'm sure there are, I don't know, a non-violent equivalent to a World of Warcraft raid or something that you could come up with. But it just didn't have anything like any of that.
I mean, like, there's, you know, The Sims, right? So let's, like, compare this game. Compare Glitch to The Sims. It's kind of similar, right? I mean, you've got...
Somebody in chat, was it CDM, said that in The Sims, your enemy is entropy because everything breaks around you if you're not constantly spending the time fixing it.
But The Sims Social failed. Right? Like, an MMO that was not centered around killing skeletons, based on, like, one of the most, if not the most popular video game franchise ever, was just an abject failure.
I heard that a lot of that, or at least part of that, was down to bad social systems. They had some sort of, like, voting or karma set up so that people could be tagged as griefers,
mm-hmm.
and then people were using that system
to tag innocent people as griefers.
Yeah, to extort the new players' money. Give me all your money, or I'll tag you as a griefer.
Weird.
Basically, yeah.
I didn't ever hear, apart from, so there was a little bit of rumbling in that Metafilter thread about, like, yeah, it sucked that I spent all this time getting to the point where I could, like, tend this really amazing garden, and then people would just run in and pick the plants. And I thought, huh, did I do that? Not knowing, because I'm Steve Urkel in this story. did I do that not knowing that, like, this is somebody's thing that they care about, that they, like...
Did you go into people's houses?
I don't know. Maybe they weren't talking about doing it in their house. Like, can you go into other people's yards?
I don't know.
You can run around and interact with the plants in the street in front of their house. You can't go in their backyard, not without them being there, I don't think. So I think anybody, I don't know, I think that's the fault of that metafilter comment.
Well, unless it was earlier, unless it was prior to when you could get houses, right? And they're like, it's like, if there were ways to meaningfully interact with the world other than naming a pig fart, you know,
fart pig.
I seem to recall them talking about, like, there being, like, zones that were under construction, and they were under construction because people were spending resources to make things in them, right? But then at that point, it's like, well, if this is gamey enough, you're just going to end up with, like, the cave with the cave of infinitely respawning mining nodes of the most valuable thing that you can mine. You know, it's... So we were talking about this in relation to KOL, and there are a number of differences, right? KOL cost nothing to develop. I just did it.
The beginning.
Yeah. I did it in my spare time while I had a job. I was one dude. I did not hire anybody until it was making way more money than it took to safely hire some dudes. And it grew. It started out as a...
like it became viable before it became a business.
Right.
Right. Which.
So that's extremely different in that you never had external pressure to recoup any money. There was never any sense of a deadline. You could just sort of develop at your own pace and your own direction. You had no one telling you what to do at all.
I never got the sense that there were people breathing down Stewart's neck telling him what to do.
I don't know.
He probably wouldn't have told us if there had been.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
He would have just said, you should try this awesome gin. It's brown.
They seem to sort of be doing what they wanted to do, but it is shocking to me that there's no, like, that they, I mean, and I'm not doubting it, but, like, that they can't even leave a skeletal version of the game just running for the people that are playing it and not working on developing it anymore. Like, would that just defeat the purpose in their minds, or is it, like... Do they just have no belief
based on that fact and just based on what I know about stuff, I think it is just wholly technically infeasible for them to do that. A team of 50 dudes is going to have a lot of server infrastructure driving the thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, we are so fucking rinky dink.
Sure.
Right. You know, and still, we are rinky-dink, but there are hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of hardware down there and costs multiple thousands of dollars a month just for existing in a data center and being there, right? So, sure. I mean, if we went out of business, well, why can't you just leave it up? Well, I could, but somebody has to pay all the fucking bills.
Well, right, but
just for it to exist,
what
right?
I'm wondering is, I don't think they ran themselves down to $0. Maybe they did. But, like, you know, if they knew that this was the trajectory it was taking, like, why not stop a month earlier, take the cost streams down from 600K to 60K and run it for 10 more months or something, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't think you could. I mean,
if you stop but these actively developing, so no, that's the thing. Okay, if the game isn't crashing,
right. But these are like
what you are paying for is
who. What who is paying? Like, yeah, so if you the only way to get the game down from 600K a month to 60K a month is to literally fire every person.
Except for one or two dudes, right? And it's those guys.
Not two grown-ups. Like,
they don't have to work full-time.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. If you are not actively developing anything and the game is not broken, like it is running, then all you need to do is, like, apply some patches and make sure that the game doesn't, like, fail to load or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why, without a fundamental, like, technology shift, they couldn't just let the game exist
because,
in its current state.
Because just having it exist in its current state is a job for multiple dudes. But what are their jobs?
Like, what are they doing? That's what I don't understand.
I mean, if we just walked away from KOL.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it would. Like,
months, maybe?
Maybe just the basic shit would continue to work for some single-digit number of months if we did nothing. But every once in a while, a hard drive fills up, sure. And we have to delete some shit. Every once in a while, you know...
No, I know. I realize that there are things that have to be done, but, I don't know. I wonder if that is really multiple guys' full-time jobs and whether that could actually be... You know, they've thought through this and they don't want to do it, you know, and, like, I'm not trying to question that. I'm just saying that it is surprising that it's not an option that they considered and thought was viable or worth doing.
Maybe if we did a petition, like an internet petition.
Oh, to the White House and get enough signatures that Obama has to tell these guys to keep Glitch online.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's now a matter of national security.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's the news.
I call him Obamsta. So, Jesus Christ, this is lasting forever.
Well, we skipped a week.
Assignment. Bad piggies. Man, it was over a month ago that we assigned three iOS games as our assignment.
Like a month and a half.
We've lost the thread, guys.
Man, is it shit really has fallen apart. 10 o'clock?
Bad Piggies is the best of these three games. Bad Piggies is a good game.
Yep, I liked it quite a bit.
I don't even know what the fuck to say because the Angry Birds people made a game that I really liked a lot.
What was the one that wasn't Kuma Lumo or Angry
Dungeon
Piggies?
Story.
Dungeon Story. The one that was just kind of blah, trying to be Dungeon Raid.
Oh, right.
Oh, Wargames Whopper released a patch that gave it an endless mode, and it kind of sucks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it turns out when I asked for something, that's not actually what I wanted.
That sucks.
It's an endless mode, but it starts out just crazy easy. Oh. So, you have to play for, 15 minutes before it gets to the point where you're actually playing a game instead of just sort of going through a rote
sequence of tasks. Did you play any of the stuff that was, balance changed in Whopper?
Nope.
Yeah, me either.
Anyway, Bad Piggies.
Yeah.
It's a fucking sweet physics game. It's
it's a physics engine.
It's like a goal-driven, incredible machine.
Yeah.
I didn't get into it.
Really?
I played like four levels.
Oh, wow.
It's
good. It's really good.
I got frustrated.
There's an early level where one of the stars is on top of this giant rock off in the middle of nowhere, and I tried for ages to figure out how to get it and couldn't get it.
You really need to just power through and learn the tricks that the later levels teach you and then go back to the early levels and try to get all the stars.
I kind of figured that was what it was, and I just wasn't enjoying it enough to put that much study into it.
I thought it was great.
I liked that you either needed to bring some knowledge of physics into it, because it behaves sort of like the physics in the world does, or you needed to play with it enough to learn how the principles work, right? Because there's a point where you get wings and you have to deal with lift, and that's different and interesting and requires you to sort of deal with things in a very tricky way.
What is the tail of the airplane actually
do? Stabilize
do
it
physically,
yeah.
Does it? What does that mean in that? Because I feel like with the wing on top, it just for a given value of forward motion, it just generates some upward motion starting maybe at the midpoint between the center of gravity of the thing and the wing,
but it also will stall out. And that causes problems and stuff like the wing, the tail prevents you from stalling as easily.
Hmm.
It slows down the rate of pitch basically in the game.
Uh-huh. So I mean, does it that like just create some rotational force? I don't actually know what the tail of an airplane does in terms of flight physics, but I'm just saying I'm trying to imagine how it's modeled. In this.
Well, I mean, if you just apply the forward sort of propeller force to a wing, it's going to climb to the point where it stalls and then just fall straight down, basically, right? And the back wing sort of provides a different set of lift that sort of keeps it climbing at a lower angle, so it never stalls if you don't go too fast, basically.
So, I mean, could you build a plane that didn't have a tail but just had a wing on the front and a wing on the back? Would that work? I don't know that the sandbox gives you two wings to play with.
I think you can get to the point where you get multiple wings.
See, this is another cool thing about it. Once you get past 10th or 12th level, you didn't actually find the cool part of the game because you didn't play far enough into it. Once you get past, I think, the 15th.
It's the 12th. It's divided into 12. Well, so there's 12 levels and then 3 bonus levels, but once you get you don't have to do the bonus levels at all.
So it unlocks the sandbox, which every level that you beat, just every level that you beat adds a new part to the sandbox. And then it's just a big thing. There are these different levels with 20 star boxes to collect. And
they're much, much bigger and
freeform.
Yeah,
huge, huge levels. And you can just here's 5 engines and crazy powered wheels and stuff. You can just make these crazy ass machines to try to get these things. And you keep, you'll play some levels, unlock some new parts, go into the sandbox, dick around. The fact that it would be like a game where beating a level, your reward is a new kind of resource to work with in Minecraft.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Or like a new
it
block.
Gets to, like a new block. Yeah. It takes a while for this game to grab a guy like us in the way that a game grabs us. I mostly because I had no option but to play games on my phone, I kept playing it past the point where I was really enthusiastic about it, but then I just got really into it.
I thought the levels were really well designed, but I also simultaneously felt like their engine led me to question from time to time whether I had a bad design or whether I had just not sort of navigated the level properly. Because there's, once you start getting motors that you can turn on and off, you, it becomes important when and for how long you leave motors on to like build up just enough energy over a hill, but not to like launch off the top of the hill, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because your shit will just like break when you land if you don't like hug the ground or...
So like sometimes you'll like get a lot of the way through a level and then fail and be like, well, is that my fault? Do I need to redesign my vehicle?
Or do I just need to be more careful? Yeah. And the third batch, the like ones where you have to carry the egg to the end, in addition to your pig, it seems like that's what that set of levels is. It's just, all right, you've played the first two sets of levels, you've learned...
That was the first expansion.
You've learned the principles. The oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh. It only had the
was
first...
Was it just free?
Yeah.
Okay. You've learned the principles of this. Now here's another set of challenging levels where you... We make it pretty clear what you need to do to build this machine. You don't have a lot of options. But it's just a fucking hard level to navigate.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, all right, well, you're in a plane and you have to fly through these narrow tunnels.
Yeah.
Which I had, this was kind of funny, at dinner, I was like, all right, I've fucking tried to beat this level 500 times, probably actually 30, realistically. But I'm like, watch, man, I'm so drunk now, I'm going to pull it out of my pocket, I'm going to start it, and I'm just going to beat it on the first try, just to spectacularly fail to prove my point. And I totally fucking did. Just won it. Like, just, oh, I did. The problem was I wasn't sober before.
And the other issue I had was that they build some randomness into their physics engine, just like they do in Angry Birds. It might be the same physics engine for all I know.
I don't know this, but like, it seems like there's more going on because like forces will cause objects that are fused together to break apart and stuff, and I don't know how much of that there is
in the Bad Piggies.
Yeah, I mean, does Angry Birds have
cohesion?
Pieces that are adhered to one another, or is sort it just of. Stacks of stuff?
It's not always just stacks. Things do not just fall over because of gravity purely. Like there are weird situations where there'll be stuff that's like tilted over, but it doesn't fall down for some reason because it's like sort of adhering. The adhesion in Bad Piggies is weird because like they give you stronger and heavier materials, but that also holds together better. Like the steel boxes hold together way better than the wooden ones, which is sort of interesting, but you also have, like, it takes more thrust to get stuff moving or more balloons or whatever. I played all the way through, got all the stars, and then I actually paid the couple bucks to unlock the like premium sandbox and played with that for quite a while.
What's the difference between a wooden wheel and the metal, like, shopping cart looking wheel?
The wooden wheels roll slower. Mm-hmm.
They have more starting friction.
I think that was also part of, because I felt like there is very little instruction or explanation.
Well, that's what I was talking about with the physics. With an uneven wooden wheel, you would expect it to just perform worse than sort of a machined rubber and metal wheel, right?
Well, I mean, the first level where I had to deal with that metal wheel is like, okay, here's a thing where you've got a box and two wood wheels and a metal wheel, and I'm like, what's the difference between these two things?
So you play with it.
Yeah, and did you not notice a difference? Like, if you put the metal wheel on the front of your car, it will probably run faster down the hill than if you put the wooden wheel on the front.
I did not.
Depending
because
on where the weight is distributed.
Because I happened to get the solution to that level the first
right
time
away.
And went on to the next one. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it is a game that rewards experimentation and observation and sort of thinking outside the box. There's a whole set of, like, in addition to the stars and the star boxes or whatever, there's also scattered around in random levels are little skulls that you can collect, which unlock additional stuff.
Couple of those. Yeah, I mean, and that is that stuff that, generally speaking, I am all about. But
yeah, I mean, I wonder if you gave it some more time, whether it would grab you. Did you play it on the iPad or the iPhone?
Phone.
I wonder if the iPad would be better.
I also just kind of don't. I don't like the art. I think it's very.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty inoffensive.
It could certainly be worse. I just don't like these characters and the musical loops were extremely short and got very repetitive.
Yeah, you turn the music off.
And I don't know. It was not an aesthetically pleasing experience.
Sound on iPhone games is just wasted on me because I never, ever have the sound on when I'm playing. Like, if I'm out in public, I will just have it silent. If I want to hear anything, I will be listening to a podcast while I play the game.
At first I thought the music in Super Hexagon was not related to the gameplay, but the last few times I've played it, I've noticed that I'm doing the moves in relation to the music, and I'm not sure whether or not
it's just a hallucination.
Well, no, I'm not sure if I think it might be a trap. I think I would not be surprised if I allow myself to be taught to react with the music, then at some point it's going to start throwing things in on like half beats that are impossible to get because I'm trying to go to the music.
You know who wouldn't fall for that trap? D20 Burlesque. Much better sense of rhythm.
Guys, we should probably stop a podcast.
What?
It's late.
Are you kidding? We haven't even told them what next week's assignment is.
I know. What is next week's assignment, Kevin?
It is Loom.
Yeah. We're gonna be doing a show fairly soon, and so we wanted something that we could just kind of sit down and play in a sitting.
Yeah.
So, yes. Loom. I think you can buy it on Steam.
For Mac or PC. I just made sure.
Although, I am going to play it in ScumVM, because if you buy it on Steam, I'm pretty sure you can't play it with square pixels. I'm not even going to deal with that scoffing.
Yep.
I wasn't scoffing. I agree, actually.
Yeah, you do. I wasn't talking about you.
Yeah, it was me.
Kestvin.
Shantoodle.
Well,
Kevin, if somebody wanted to put us on a rocket to Mars.
Yep. Well, they should send us a barrel of money via Twitter at VGHotDog, email VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or check out our website, videogameshotdog.com, where you can find a link to our forums. And that's the end.
Good. Thanks for doing an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with me, fellas.
Yeah, well, thanks to our listeners for listening to this incredibly long episode.
It's been a pleasure serving with you.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
We'll see you next time.
See you.
How did the Christian sort of afterlife come out of what I assume was the Judeo afterlife system? Because like that's just like everybody hangs out in Sheol, right? Like it's all even. There's no real
God. And there's all those fucking like blood worms flying around everywhere, and there's no shop.
Yeah.